Hi, everyone. Welcome to the BizDev Podcast, the podcast about developing your business. I'm David Baxter, your host, and I'm joined, per usual, by Gary Voigt, who is joining us today from the Frasier set, 1987. Well done, man.
Great reference for anybody who's going to get that. Frasier. What?
Man, you look like you're in your grandfather's basement. What is happening? This is great radio, by the way, because most people don't watch the video. So this is fabulous content.
But, it's not radio either. It's a podcast, but whatever. Between your references and then radio. Yeah.
All right, Gramps. Where are you? Why are you in such a different place?
No, we're redoing the way the office space looks. And so it's like in transition right now.
It was too cool. So you want to get really, really ugly.
It was really cool. It was, but wanted to change.
Nice. Yeah. That lamp is crying.
Okay. Square box behind you.
That square box is quality Target material there, buddy. You back off of my Target.
Google, turn on his lights.
Oh, rude. She can't hear you. You're in my earphones. All right. More importantly, we are joined by Chase Coher, who is the CEO at Aim for Hire. Welcome, Chase. Sorry you have to deal with Grandpa over here.
Oh, no. It's an honor, man. It's an honor to be here. Excited to see y'all's backgrounds and kind of Target shopping and old school shopping. I appreciate the diversity of it.
If you're looking for some really bad IKEA furniture or something, Gary's your man, apparently.
This is your podcast. Yeah.
Target.
Wherever I am, at least it's not as lame as some weird virtual background of like a waterfall or something.
That is true.
Yeah.
I give props for anyone who is not blurring their background. I don't know what is – can I get on my soapbox for a second? What is up with that? I mean, there's two people – and this is in interviews, which I'm sure we'll talk about your company. Interviews, I don't know what it is, but everyone looks like they're in one of those rooms that they've been captured by terrorists that have nothing on the back of their wall. And so it doesn't show any location or time or anything. And they're in these white walls and you're like, who hurt you, man? Cause dude, a little color is not going to kill anything. Or they'll put themselves in like a fake bedroom. That's it at the top of a mountain or in a high rise in New York City.
Conference table. With the all glass windows or all glass walls or whatever.
Well, and they're on the 87th floor in New York City, of course.
The funny thing is when someone uses a virtual background, at least for me, my immediate response is how bad is the real background?
Yeah, I'm immediately judging you. Well, yeah. I love it also that wear headsets, like real headphones, and they'll have a gap between their head and the hood. So you'll see their real house. We had a guy, I will not mention names. It was not Gary, though.
We are tangenting and I'm sorry, Chase, but we'll get to it eventually.
Let it rip.
Had a guy who he talked this game. I'm not, again, Gary knows exactly what I'm talking about. He talked this game. Like he was amazing and knew all things. And he had behind him, he was in this, svelte, like Sweden or Icelandic apartment with all the, natural wood and a volcano behind him. It was this beautiful, serene scene. And then somehow he moved in such a way that the real background showed up and it was like covered in clothes and he was clearly in a hallway of someone's apartment.
It looks like he was crashing in like a friend of a friend's like spare bedroom with two other dudes.
Yeah. And he was talking like he was this mogul. Anyway.
It's a lot of overcompensating. I feel like
it's a bit.
Hey,
I don't mind the blur. I don't mind the blur. If you're going to do something, blur it up. Fine. But I always love when it's blurry and then someone walks by and you have this blur thing wandering around. Anyway, let's talk about you, Chase. Let's get focused. Yeah. Let's get focused. You run Aim for Hire. Tell me what that means.
Lifestyle brand, as you can tell. Obviously Hire's HIRE. So we're in the recruiting space here in Austin, Texas. So we pretty much represent and recruit some of the top tech startups here in town. They're looking to scale up, hire kind of across the board. I mean, mostly it's tech and product type hiring, like skill sets that are in demand, but obviously a lot's changed in the last 12 months. So, whether it be tech and even some companies that are non-tech, I think we were just a boutique recruiting type company that works with like very selective hiring as far as these companies that have 15 million boxes they need to check when they hire somebody. You know, that's kind of our MO and where we really specialize in. So in a lot of cases in Austin, it's tech startups, but it's not always tech. I mean, frankly, you can kind of make an argument that everyone needs to make the right hire, especially at early stages of a company. So that's kind of where we would come in and support that.
So you are talking about startups that probably have been funded. They're doing a massive hire for scale. And so they're constantly looking for new people. That is the,
exactly,
your bread and butter. Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, shoot, the first 4 years of this business, you know, tech was booming. So there was so much capital going around that these companies, in a lot of cases, they were all competing with each other for talent. But also you add in Google, Facebook, Amazon, who are throwing, you know, $250,000 base salary at these people that had 1 or 2 years of experience. I mean, it's an interesting landscape to compete for talent in. So that was really where like the need arose. Now, the past year, obviously tech's been down. There's been a lot of layoffs by the Facebooks and Googles of the world. So things have changed pretty dramatically. But in the first 4 years, yeah, the idea was that to try to add a competitive advantage to startups that were trying to get a chance to speak with and, you know, quote unquote, sell that talent on like what they were doing, why their opportunity or why their company was going to be the next big thing. So that was kind of really where we focused the majority of our recruitment efforts.
So let me, I have some questions that might be uncomfortable. So if they are, just let me know. So I run a dev company. So I get recruiters talking to me all the time. Mm-hmm. And I know most of them either will give you a dev, or, you know, they've got a guy they're trying to place, which is not all that common anymore, simply because most of them are taken. But they either charge a extra hourly rate on top of their hourly rate, if they're hourly, mm-hmm, for the first year, or if they're salary, they take a chunk. Whatever their salary is, you add 15 or 20%, and that's for that first year, and that's how they make their money. Is that, right, generally speaking, how you guys work?
I'd say generally that's how the industry works. I'd say we were pretty creative, especially when you start a new company, obviously, in a, sure, very saturated landscape. As you mentioned, there are a million recruiting companies and recruiters out there. So for us to really like get a grasp and kind of get in with some of these companies, you know, the trade-off was sometimes like cutting our costs or cutting our fees by half of maybe what our competitors were doing. In other cases, we took stock options. Now, are those ever going to be worth anything? Maybe, maybe not. But really, that wasn't the play for us. It was more so like, hey, we got skin in the game now. Like, we're giving up cash for stock in your company. So like, we're not going to be sending you people that we don't believe in, because obviously we want these stock options to become something, you know, down the road. So that was a bit of like, you know, you've got skin in the game, I've got skin in the game, like we can actually have a partnership here, as opposed to the typical recruiter relationship, which is, I'll send you resumes, you interview them, let me know when you hire one, and I'll send you an invoice for 30 or 40 grand. That was not our strategy from the get-go. But yeah, there's different ways to get it done. But I'd say, honestly, we got to get pretty creative on the fee structure side to compete.
So that means you guys have little bits of equity of lots of different companies that may or may not be worth anything. How do you pay your rent?
Enough cash. I mean, and as I mentioned, those were the early days of the business. We didn't have, yeah, a lot of overhead at that time. Now we'll still kind of have those conversations now, but I think we're probably a little more, now that we have salaries to cover of, you know, 10, 15 people, you have to start accounting more for the cash than the stock option long-term plays. So yeah, usually it's a mix, but I think there's a lot of room there. You know, a big recruiting company has so much overhead that they charge these really high fees. You're small boutique, you don't have a lot of overhead, you can get away with charging lower percentages and still make money. Sure. Now you usually have to do higher, you know, you're going to have to do a higher scale of hires, to make up for that kind of lower fee. But, then you start kind of looking at, are you sacrificing quality by doing a lower price? And like, I feel like that's what every startup usually kind of deals with. When you're trying to go into a space and be competitive, but also not be considered like this dumpster fire garbage resume center that charges $5,000 for a hire compared to 30, but you know, the resumes and the candidates suck.
So my uncomfortable question is this: you started your company 4 years ago when the world was on fire with stupid money, as you were talking about earlier. People could raise money doing anything. because people, you know, interest rates were low. I guess if you don't know, I'm not that I'm an expert, but if you don't know how investments work when it comes to the startups, it might not make any sense to you. But if you have a stock market that is volatile, but it's not great, you got a bond market that's paying you nothing, and you want some big returns, you go in and you invest in companies. That's a very common thing. The, you know, real estate was kind of weird 4 years ago. There was not a lot of places to put your money if you were rich. Yeah. So a lot of them just said, hey, I'm going to be an investor. They don't know what they're necessarily doing. And so they hear, ooh, crypto, that sounds cool. Let's throw money at it, right? NFT, magic. So they have this and they're throwing money at it. And so raising capital as a startup for I'd say 5 years, 6 years was stupid, easy comparatively. It's never easy, but it was easier. And so I always liken that to a good time in the real estate market when you see all the realtors show up, right? Everyone wants to be a realtor when the market's on fire. Mm-hmm. And then they don't realize that the market is going to tank because it's just what it happens. And they all run away. And the real realtors are still there.
Yeah.
Recruiters are kind of the same way in a certain way. So I'm curious, now that your world has changed dramatically, interest rates are gone skyrocketed, bond markets are sweet, so I got a safe place to land. Mm-hmm. I don't need to do this. Crypto is a joke. So now they do AI. I get it. But there's always something, right? But
it's always something.
How have you weathered this storm? Because I would imagine a lot of your competitors who started up when you did are dying or pretending they're not dying, but they're on their last legs. How have you succeeded in this much more difficult market?
Yeah, I mean, disclaimer, like we certainly haven't come out unscathed. I'd say it's been, this year has been our greatest test by far. And great, sure. my greatest test of my career. I mean, having been in the space for a decade, but like you mentioned, I mean, we've never seen the Fed rate this level. We've never seen venture capital funding down as low as it is right now. So I'd say diversification of where you're getting your money, you know, where, how are you funding your business, is one. I mean, you cannot, you know, I think like you mentioned, a lot of recruiting companies that maybe were banking on that one big like Dell or Google or whoever it was that they were staffing for, you know, if you're getting 50 or more percent of your revenue from one client, and then all of a sudden, you know, that client goes not belly up, but maybe just stops hiring completely, you know, you're screwed. So I think for us, by the nature of our client base, by working with startups, we never really had this one big company that gave us all these roles at once. It was always this very diversified kind of portfolio of startups, that we'd be recruiting maybe like two or three roles for each. Now it's a lot harder from a sales perspective because you have to constantly be refilling the funnel with startups that are actually hiring. But it enabled us to not kind of just sink overnight because all our revenue was coming from one place. Now we were working with tech startups, which as a whole really got smacked. So in a lot of cases, we had to all of a sudden kind of flip the switch on what companies are actually going to be hiring in this market. And in a lot of cases, those are like very safe, like, you know, almost recession proof type industries. And healthcare. What kind of talent pools do they, what kind of talent do they need? And we found in a lot of cases, like accounting, finance, kind of some digital marketing, like those types of skill sets were important to those companies. So, and a lot of them were private equity owned, or maybe they were just independent. They didn't rely on funding. And that's where we had to pivot a lot of our efforts. We're like, all of a sudden, we got to find companies like that to keep us afloat. So we still have tech startups, but you know, probably one of every 10 that was hiring last year is either paused or laying people off right now. So, it was a, yeah, you realize what kind of team you have. I mean, you go from like you said, in real estate, it's like things are hot. And all of a sudden, like you see a flip in that, you really get to find out who the true players are in that space, that can sell and recruit and whatever else in an industry where your back's against the wall. So yeah, for us really it was diversifying, and we were already fairly diversified, but I feel like you always, in a cyclical business, you always have to be ready for when that cycle is going to recycle. So that was kind of our thoughts.
Well, income hides all sorts of problems for sure.
For positions like designer or developer, which positions do you see are harder to place?
Two very different personalities for one, yes. From a recruiting from a recruiting
one's
perspective.
One's a designer, the other one's just, you know, not worth talking to.
One can be a little bit easier to have a phone call with. The other, you know, I think.
You got one prima donna and one dork. That's what you have. I understand.
Honestly, it's weird because, I mean, for the first couple of years, it was back-end devs, DevOps, infrastructure type hires. And then the next 2 years was like a lot of these product designers and front-end developers of all kinds. So you always see like peaks and valleys of different demands, but I'd say the designer side is such a unique one because these companies are looking at your portfolio. So it doesn't even really, it depends on every startup we've worked with has kind of a different taste of art or design. And I think much like, you know, you see these artists that sell their paintings for trillions of dollars and others that sell them for $50. It's like, you know, Apple is in the eye of the beholder. Like some people find that artwork very impressive, while as others are like, that's not my style. I don't find that attractive. So I think placing designers can be difficult unless you really understand what that company wants from a visual perspective. So I'd say those are tricky, but between the two, I mean, they're both can be harder to find, but definitely have different personalities and communication skills, if you will.
What's the temperature like now with remote versus in-office or hybrid, like as far as positions go? I noticed you guys do work with a lot of remote.
Some of my clients may hate me saying, I'd say the shift undoubtedly has been since the last year and a half has been at least hybrid. Frankly, I've seen a lot of companies that go full 5 days a week. And it's
in office.
And it's tough because for us, you know, overnight when COVID happened, we went from like our competitive advantages having this local skill set, our local talent pool of skills to companies are like, oh, I don't care where they sit. They can be in Utah. They can be in New York. And so we went from a local to a quote unquote national recruiting company like within 24 hours. Now it's, you know, because of LinkedIn and other tools, you can virtually recruit anywhere. But I think you really start to kind of, you know, when things have shifted back to this hybrid model, it's actually benefited probably more of the local recruiting companies because they can kind of, they don't have to cover the entire United States with their recruitment efforts. They can really kind of silo on their local area. But I'd say overall, like, yeah, probably 75-80% of startups that we talk to are at least hybrid, if not 5 days a week in office, which is interesting because it is. And to some, like they don't care. And for those, you know, they have a competitive advantage because you get more of a larger pool of talent to choose from if you're fully remote. And I think a lot of engineers and technical talent got used to working from home and won't entertain going into an office. Whereas others are, you know, still stuck to the idea of you need to be here from 9 to 5. I won't offer my opinion on what that is. We're a fully remote recruiting company. Now most of us are in the same city, so we get together quite a bit, but we've been able to make it work, but it is difficult to keep everybody on the same page and communication and, creativity and kind of brainstorming. I get the benefits of being in person, but I think for different departments, it's tough because you can't just force the marketing and sales team to come in, but everybody else can be remote. Otherwise they'll get pissed off. So it's like, you know, if you're going based off talent, like you probably offer the fully remote jobs to the most in-demand talent because you want to obviously be able to secure that talent at your company. But it's kind of hard to do that if you only force it upon 50% of the company to come into office. What are y'all's thoughts on these things? I mean, you guys are interfacing with, I'd imagine, offering customers and seeing your customer base probably change quite a bit with the economic or not.
No. We are very blessed in that our clients generally stay for a long period of time. We don't have much churn, knock on wood. Our talent, our clients have been very stable for the most part. I mean, we have some, of course, but we have been very blessed in that once they join, generally our clients last minimum a year or two, but most of them are 4 or 5. So we don't have to worry about that. Too much. I mean, we do work with startups and those do come and go. But ours are pre-revenue generally when they come to us. So very different kind of startup than what you're talking about. What we have
we
found
are a remote
in this
agency. So
yeah, we're 100% remote.
Yeah.
And I, every single one of my devs would quit tomorrow if I ever told them to come in for sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's just, that's what, and I would imagine any company in today's world, and you would know better than me, but any company in today's world that said, hey, dev, you have to be at the office 9 to 5, 5 days a week, has a tremendously hard time hiring anyone.
That's the only way they got.
So can you find those people? Do those people? I can't imagine any dev that I've spoken to in the last year who'd be totally fine with that. Unless you are working on, you know, something super exciting, like just the work is super rewarding in of itself, where like you're like building Tesla's, you know, software, or you're building NASA stuff. Sure. Okay, fine.
Or if you're joining a team of other devs that you know of and you can learn from, you know what I mean? Like if there's a little bit of like a mentoring value there.
I do think it benefits the more junior, or it's easier to attract more of the junior up and coming talent, especially if they can make, you know, for one, if they're laid off and really need work, then, you know, they got to decide between what their options are at that point. I do think some juniors and mid-levels are open to the idea of going into office if they do get to work with some architect or high-level leader that they could learn from. Now, that does not go for every junior or mid-level engineer. I'm just listing off like one of the reasons you could, besides like working on the most cutting-edge, bleeding-edge, cool product, would be that.
Yeah, but that architect doesn't want to come in. So what's happening?
That's true.
Valid point. And sometimes, I mean, with a startup, more often than not, that architect is the founder. And since they have skin in the game as the founder, like they are going to the office because it's their baby, sure. It's their company. But no, it's a great question. And I think they exist, but it certainly is not a widespread, like I could find a million architects here in town that will go in the office 5 days a week. I mean, that's a steep ask. Location of your office would be the other thing. I mean, and depending on what city you're in, I mean, in a city like Austin, it's so expensive to live near downtown that most people buy houses probably 45 minutes to an hour drive. So if you're going after someone that has kids and a family and a house out in the suburbs, and you're asking them to drive in 5 days a week, that's steep. Unless you're paying them just out the wazoo. But even then, it's a challenge to answer your question. And I try to work with startups and advise them on the best ways to get certain talent. But I think some of them, you know, I think everybody suffers from that. Well, I know this other startup, and they have their devs in the office 3 days a week. So why won't they come in to the office at my startup? So I think sometimes there's a lack of creativity and more of a following when it comes to those things. Or like Google's doing it. Google forces people in the office. So why can't we? And I'm like, well, you're not Google. You're not paying.
You're not Googling. You're not dropping that kind of money.
Exactly. You're not offering, you know, free breakfast, lunch, and dinner catered by chefs in the office. But so it's always interesting having these conversations, because I think ideally they want them in the office, but you know, sometimes you have to accept the reality that you might not get what you want.
I mean, I started my company wanting everybody in the office. And this was 7 years ago. So way before this was normal, we had to become, remote just by the nature of what happened. We needed talent. We couldn't find it, we have a flow now that I enjoy, that we are remote and it works. We get together sometimes, you know, once, like we had our 10-year anniversary party, had everybody up. That was very fun. We had our leadership guys a couple of weeks ago come in and we all talked. There is something magical about having everyone around. I worked in that old environment where you went in and sat at the feet of your architect and learned. And it's interesting. I've heard stats that the junior devs, and this is specifically speaking of devs, because I know that world, but I would imagine this is true across a lot of industries. Junior devs are getting really really tough. They're not as good because they don't have that mentorship, because that architect isn't coming. I mean, you're right. Startup founders, they're coming in, but you know, you're in a normal software environment. The architecture doesn't want to come in. This team leads don't want to come in. They don't need to anymore. And remote work, I've seen the studies that say, you know, if you're a senior and you know what you're doing, it doesn't really affect you all that much. You can still be productive. If you're junior and you're just wandering around, bumping into walls, it just crushes you because you don't have that guy that you can look over his shoulder or just turn over in your desk and be like, hey, dude, I'm stuck here. Right.
Yeah.
That's really, really hard. One of the things that I was going to ask if you've noticed this. So we hired our last guy, I don't know, 3 months ago. We put out a job post, and I mentioned this in previous episodes, but put out a job post. We had 1,000 applicants in less than 48 hours for a dev, just front end dev. Now, a lot of those, it was through LinkedIn. I was willing to pay for a job, but I didn't. I think I ended up paying. I think on LinkedIn, you can do it for free, but they say, hey, you should boost this. Yeah. Okay. So I boosted it. It was $50 a day. I turned it on one day, turned it off the next day. I had 1,000 applicants. Like, it was so funny to me because my $50, my little budget that I had set up, was gone in 3 seconds. Like, I pushed go, I refreshed the screen, it was gone. Like, it was, I mean, I'm not even exaggerating. So I'm like, well, this budget's weird. Unless you have a lot of money, it's gone. And so we had 1,000 applicants. Now, to be fair, probably at least half of them didn't meet our requirements. So they were weeded out immediately. And then we weeded through probably 200 people who checked the boxes. And then we whittled it down from there. But when we did the same exercise a year and a half ago, we had 100. So to me, I mean, as a recruiter, it's probably a sweet time on that side of the fence. On the other side of the fence, no one's hiring, right? Which is why there's 1,000 people applying, especially since we're 100% remote. So we're, you know, all these devs are, yes, I don't want to go into the office. And so, and their employer, their old employer is like, no, you have to. And they're like, I'm out, dude. I mean, are you seeing that? Are you seeing ridiculous numbers of people knocking on your door trying to place them?
It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, for 7 or 8 years, it was a complete waste of time for a senior level engineering product design to post a senior level role and expect to actually fill the job by whoever applied. And at least from my perspective, and this is more Austin centric, it was a complete waste of time because you were getting applicants from all different varies that rarely had the experience you wanted. And the market was so hot at that point that anybody that did apply, if you didn't get back to them within 24 hours, interview them and get them an offer within a week, like they were off the market already. So to answer your question, this is a complete reversal of what's been going on the last decade. It's fascinating really to see thousands of applicants to one job. And it's raised new challenges, especially for startups. I mean, you got companies and CTOs and whatever that they already have a trillion things to do. And now they got to go through 1,000 applicants. Sometimes we'll even get paid just to go through the people they have that applied and pick out the top 5 or 10, screen them and get them in the interview process. So, it is night and day difference. And the fully remote jobs, like undoubtedly get the most applicants. A lot of the in-office ones, like you still get a good amount, but it doesn't even compare. So it is definitely still the attractive option from the vast majority of the talent pool.
So I want to take a hard turn.
Okay.
You've been in the recruiting business for a long time, relatively speaking.
Give or take, yeah.
But this isn't your first foray into that. Before you did Aim for Hire, you worked as a talent agent for other people for years. So what is it that made you think 4 years ago, the market's on fire, right? It's a hot market. Though, you know, this is going to last forever, which is what I'm sure you thought when you started the business. What is it that made you leave your previous employer for startup land? Like where's that entrepreneurial spirit coming from? Cause that's a scary thing, right? You're making probably a sweet paycheck at your other place, right? Good recruiters. Let me rephrase that very specifically. Good recruiters make a lot of money. Bad recruiters make nothing. So I'm assuming you were a good one. Otherwise you would not have felt confident enough to go out on your own. So you're making a sweet living. Your wife's probably happy. Life is good. You got a mortgage, you got kiddos, everybody's good. And you're like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to change all this and throw it all down the toilet and start from nothing.
Yeah.
How'd that go?
You're making me sound cooler than I am. I swear the story wasn't near as awesome. I was always very set in my career of like, I wanted to move up faster than anybody had ever And I saw the recruiting space as one where like what you put in is what you get out, much like any services industry to a level. But you know, I did 1 year with a big recruiting company, got recruited away to launch an office for a mid-cap recruiting company, did that for 3 years and was like, what's next? And frankly, like the only job above where I was at was starting my own company. So in my mind, like, I guess I was always ambitious enough that I thought it'd be cool to have my own company. The opportunity came sooner than I expected. Partly from what you said, the market was so hot that I'm like, you know, if I'm going to do this, like now's the time to get in.
Yeah.
So the writing was kind of on the wall, and the last company I was with, you know, in my appreciation of it, I mean, they gave me an opportunity when I was 24 to launch an office and build out a team. And so I was drastically underqualified for that, but I also worked harder than anybody that they would have hired to do that job for that reason. But, you know, they were really, as you see in a lot of these recruiting companies, they shift towards recurring revenue and less risk, which in that case was working for bigger companies and recruiting for bigger companies. And that was never really my passion. So to, you know, getting to work with startups excited me. I was like a short basketball player growing up. I like had a massive chip on my shoulder since like the day I was like five. So I've always kind of like wanted to be a part of and like fight for the little guy in some ways. So I got to recruit for some startups in my last job. And I was like, man, there's like no other recruiting firms that are trying to work with just startups, partly because they're so picky, they can't pay as much. But in my mind, I was like, I can create this boutique firm, like really specialize in that underserved area, and then decide from there once I have enough capital to kind of either hire more or diversify our business. So to be frank, man, it was always in the back of my mind as far as like, you know, having my own company. But the timing, certainly the way tech was, it was kind of just like, you know, the opportunity presented itself and the timing was just elite. So I was pretty fortunate.
So how was that first year?
As I'm sure it was in your first year of business, it was live and breathe. I mean, it was all I did.
Were you able to find clients easily starting out? Because most people, I like to ask that question to startup or to founders in general, because a lot of people who have ideas of wanting to start their own business or people who have just done it, they think they're struggling and they think they're alone. And the answer is no, everyone goes through that. It's horrible unless you're just super duper lucky, which some people are. So were you one of those super duper lucky guys? It's like, bam, I got some clients, let's go. Or were you struggling and barely paying the bills for a while?
Yeah, I'd say, and to most founders, like I was calculating that I knew probably within 6 months of my last job, like I had this idea that this is something that I might want to pursue. So while it was a risk, it was a pretty calculated risk at that point. It wasn't like, you know, I decided like I was going to leave and start my own company. Like this was something that in the back of my mind, you know, I had prepared for. Now to get those first clients, man, like you said, I mean, you live and die by getting that first customer, and then obviously like knocking the ball out of the park and then having that customer hopefully spread the word or let you use them as a testimonial or put their logo on your website. You know, like those first couple customers are so critical that, you know, it's almost even worth doing the work for free just so you can kind of like build a sample of work that you can then sell to other companies. So for me, yeah, we found there were so many startups hiring, man, that honestly, it wasn't that difficult. But I went door to door sales and, you know, got the meeting with the CEO and was just like, you know, I will do whatever it takes to deliver on this. So there were certainly some denials, but once you get into that one or two first customers and then you knock it out of the park, I mean, I feel like that's probably the most pivotal part of a new company is like that first one or two. But I'd say we probably didn't make money for 3 or 4 months when I started the company. So I had some savings, but certainly, you know, ate more fast food than I probably care to admit. But after that, man, honestly, it was, you know, I offered companies really low rates just to get an opportunity, enough to pay my bills, but not really enough to make a lot of money. But I use those as kind of the foundation to then build upward from there. Is that how you guys went about doing it?
Different story. It was just me. I've told this story before, but I was working for a company doing something similar to what Big Pixel ended up doing. But I, like you, wanted to do startups And I saw there was no real room for me to grow where I was. And so I decided to go out on my own. And I had the hubris, which I believe all founders at some point have to have hubris to make the plunge. My hubris was I got them really busy and then I left. Such a jerk. And I in my hubris, I thought, well, they're so busy. They didn't have any designers, which I was doing the design work at the time, designer and development. And I figured they'll have to hire me. Yeah, that didn't work out that way.
Yeah, it didn't work out.
I got a cease and desist pretty quick, which they had no teeth. It didn't have any teeth. There's nothing they could do. But I promised them I would never steal a client, and I didn't. And so our blessing was that we had a client that I was working with there who found out I had left and wanted to work with me personally and didn't want to work with the old company. And I was like, okay, but I can't steal you. So I made a deal with my old company that I bought them. Their rule was you have to pay us all the profit we would have gotten plus a punitive amount that I got to choose. So pretty brutal. So my company's 3 months old at the time. And I basically signed a way that I would pay them $5,000 a month for the next 6 months. I was making no money. We went to lunch with those guys who wanted to hire me and like, dude, this is it. My whole mortgage, everything. I got kids. This is all on you. I need you to pay me on time and I need to make sure we're going to do this. And they're like, we got you. So for 9 months I worked for them. And then the rest is history. I've told that story a couple of times, I think at this point, but it was that first year was interesting. I almost lost the business after that first year. Cause I was working so hard on them. I didn't find any other customers.
Yeah.
So don't do that for everybody who's listening.
That is the trick, man. Cause you want to go all out for that one customer, but you also have to somehow keep the biz dev machine going.
You have to keep going.
And then hire behind that in case you do land another two or three clients, all of a sudden you don't have the ability to do it.
It's funny. You know, we started this podcast. It was me and Gary. We didn't have guests for the first four, 6 months.
My background was much worse back then too.
He was in literally a 1940s flapper apartment. It was really good. That's true. At the first episodes, he was recording on an ironing board, but we didn't do video podcasts.
Love that.
It was just audio. That. It was the only like sound, only decent room with acoustics. Yeah.
That's right. He was in the closet and I had a really bad mic. And so we sound wonderful, but, so we started this podcast because I have done every bad thing you can do as a leader. And I don't believe I didn't believe, and I'm pretty sure I'm right, that I was alone. I'm not alone in doing bad things as a leader. I was a bad leader. And I wanted to start this podcast to tell everyone, one, they're not alone. There are lots of other bad leaders. But two, you can get better. Yeah. You can become a student of it. You can become a student of business. You can become a student of leadership itself, and you can become better. And that's where I have horror story after horror story of things that I did that no one should do. And I'm sure most founders have those because there's no, like I was a good dev. I was a good designer. I wasn't great, Gary good, but I was good. I could get it done. And I thought that was enough. And that's the kicker. No one teaches you how to be a business person. They teach you how to do your trade. If they teach you how to do business, then you don't have a trade. It's kind of a weird mix, right? Yeah. So I was good at what I did, but I had no idea how to do it on any sort of scale. And so I learned. And so me and Gary would talk for an hour a week about how stupid I am. And
it's good therapy, man.
It was not just that. It was like the trials and tribulations of just trying to grow a small business
for sure,
and stuff.
For sure.
But then we decided we wanted to see what other people thought. So we started bringing guests and here we are. But
I think it's brilliant, man, to verbalize. Sometimes I wish I would have documented more about what was I thinking, you know, when I made that decision 4 years ago, 3 years ago. As you know, when you get in the world of startup and services industry, you just days fly by. So, I mean, sometimes they don't. But for the most part, for me, like the last 5 years have just flown by, despite the fact that, you know, I've been probably working like 10, 12 hour days for like 5 years. They flew by because it's just constant, I don't know, stimulation, chaos, you know, a million things going through your head. And then you have a minute to reflect on, like, maybe I made a bad decision there, but too late now. Got to go fix it.
Regret serves zero purpose. You can't change it. Just keep moving.
Yeah.
Do it better next time and just keep going forward. I people get paralyzed in the past. It means you can't do anything about it. Just keep moving.
Yeah.
It, who cares? We're all idiots. I mean, again, I got horror story after horror story. I mean, I hired Gary, for goodness sakes. I mean,
yeah.
I was about to say, you said you weren't a great leader, but I was like, but a sign of great leadership is the ability to bring on someone that's a superstar, and getting Gary, it sounds like. I mean, that demonstrates your,
you know, entrepreneurial expertise. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Lord. Now I'm going to actually have to pay him. What are you talking about? What is this?
No, don't worry. This is the part where he's going to tell the editor, just cut that out.
Yeah, just cut that whole part. We do not compliment. Yeah. That is rule number one here. We do not compliment.
Gary and I connected on LinkedIn. He Venmoed me like $100 earlier to say that. But
you know what? That part we can cut out.
The truth shall set you free, Gary. I see how it is. All right. Well, on that note, I'm going to ask our one question. I'm taking this from Gary. Normally he asks this.
Cool.
No problem.
If you were talking to, not you, but someone, and you probably do this now, considering who you focus on, but if someone came to you and they're wanting to start their own business, recruiting or otherwise, what three parts of advice would you give to that person?
Yeah, I could give them 50. I think for one, you got to be prepared to dedicate a lot of your life and a lot of your, you know, personal time outside of work to either thinking about or working or doing your business. I mean, frankly, if you're not willing to put in that kind of effort more often than not, you're going to struggle. So I think for one, it's got to be a willingness to kind of dedicate the majority of your time and prioritize the business almost over everything, maybe not over your family. But friend time, hangout time, hobbies, like those tend to go out the door pretty quick. If you're really bought in, two would be utilizing your network, man. I think, you know, the whole, like, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Like, I don't know if I 100% agree with that statement, but there is something to be said for having people that have either run a business before, or someone you know that could help you in some kind of way. I think you've got to be willing to utilize the connections you have, if you have any. And if not, you have to be willing to go out and really try to build some relationships with people that are connectors. You know, I think you have to be willing to kind of like check your pride at the door sometimes and ask somebody like, can I just pick your brain or can you give me advice? I think that's just an invaluable part. Well, yeah, I think last thing is adaptability, man. Like, I think you just have to be willing to have a plan, but know that everything is not going to go according to plan. So I think if you're the type of person that can change directions, pivot, kind of be thinking about ways to adapt to an environment, if you're in the services space, like, you almost have to be adaptive, or you're going to get killed. I mean, if you just stick to one thing and you're just going to live and die by that, you might end up dying by it if you're in a cyclical business that's going to go up and down and up and down. So those would be my three things, would just be like dedicating your life to it, utilize the connections you have, and then be willing to adapt and think about alternative ways to do what you do.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate you sharing your story with us, man.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you guys having me on.
So if anybody wanted to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
LinkedIn, probably be the best bet. Chase and then K-O-C-H-E-R. Hit me up on LinkedIn. Obviously, you can find the Aim for Hire tag on LinkedIn as well. So that'd be the best way to go.
We'll put those links in the show notes, the LinkedIn and the website.
That'd be awesome, man.
Well, man, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for joining us.
Appreciate the time, fellas.
Thank you for pointing out that I am the superstar. I appreciate that.
Superstar.
Oh my gosh.
Don't you ever forget it.
It's never going to end. Stop it. Now, the only worst thing you could have said is that you also like Wu-Tang Clan. Anyway.
Well, I also said.
He's too young for that, dude. He is
A little bit. I know a little bit. No, I did also say that it takes an excellent entrepreneur and leader to recognize top talent and then get them to join you. So it was a dual compliment. I mean, it just depends on what angle you look at it from.
Well, that's because you got a very low bar as to what good talent is.
Oh, no. No, I do it for a living. If anything, it should mean the most for me, man.
That's true. He's got an eye for it, David. I would
trust
Chase.
Oh, man. Yeah. He's got bad.
He knows what he's talking
he's
about.
He's got bad. I tell you, no talent whatsoever. All right. On that note, we are out. Thank you guys very much. We will talk to you next week.
Hi, I'm Christy Pronto, Content Marketing Director here at Big Pixel. Thank you for listening to this episode of the BizDev Podcast. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email, hello@thebigpixel.net. The BizDev Podcast is produced and presented by Big Pixel. See you next week. Until then, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Threads, YouTube, and LinkedIn.